The man who blocked his path wore only a long, shapeless white tunic, almost like a loose robe. The others within, all men, wore identical garments. "There's nothing for you here," the man repeated. Again, Ganner was struck by some weirdly familiar resonance in the voice, though he knew he'd never seen this man before. "I'm a Jedi," he said quietly. "My name is Ganner Rysode. I have come to inquire about Jason Solo. Which one of you saw him alive?" "You are mistaken. No one here saw anything. You had better go." "Please," Ganner said, "tell me what you know." He reached out through the Force to nudge a little cooperation out of this man, and awoke to find himself jogging away down the passage with no memory of having turned aside, no idea how he'd gotten here.
"What?"
he thought blankly.
"What?"
Dizzily, blurrily, he worked it out. That guy back there could use the Force, could use it as well as the most powerful of Jedi. That middle-aged, average-looking man had brushed aside Ganner's probe and blasted back with a Force compulsion so strong that even though Ganner knew what it was, it continued to drive his legs in a staggering lope away from the chamber. His lightsaber appeared in his hand. Slowly, gradually, Ganner began to withdraw from the Force, shutting down his Force presence as though he were still moving away. This left him Force blind, but also Force invisible. He crept back toward the chamber, moving silently along the passage wall. He was in over his head, way over his head. But what else could he do? "This guy's stronger than I am." Cold dread prickled up his arms, and this time, it wasn't any Force projection. It was the real thing, and there are 5 of them. "I really am going to get myself killed." But he kept moving, creeping along the wall, silent lightsaber loose in his tingling hand. He was at the chamber door, and his Force trick wouldn't fool this guy for more than another second or two. No time to plan, barely time to act. Ganner flowed into action without thinking, just moving, his blaze sizzling to life, slashing away the curtain's fastenings, gathering as it fell, bagging the head of the nearest white robe while he kicked the second aside. He faked another low-line kick and leapt high, whipping an overhand right to crash the handle of his lightsaber onto the top of a third's head, hard enough to drive him to his knees, then used him like a pommel horse, vaulting his legs high for a double kick that flattened the fourth like he'd been shot with a bowcaster. He whirled back to the first, just as the white robe managed to claw the curtain off his head and dropped him with an elbow across the jaw. He felt motion behind him and sprang into a Force-assisted backflip that spun him high and wide and ended with him in a perfectly balanced stance, one arm's length from the middle-aged man, the tip of his lightsaber's blade half a centimeter from the hollow of the man's throat. "Nobody's dead and nobody's hurt," Ganner said coolly, voice as even as his lightsaber's hum. "But that can change. Anytime. It's your call." The 4 Force invisible white robes, scattered around the small chamber, off balance, or off their feet entirely, hesitated. The middle-aged man stood motionless. Ganner gathered his caution in layers like body armor. "All right," he said, calm, quiet, and slow. "Back up, toward the door." The man's stare softened into something like resignation, and he shook his head in sad refusal.
"I'm not bluffing," Ganner said. "You and I are going to have a talk in the corridor. As long as nobody does something stupid, there's no reason why we shouldn't all live through this. Now move."
Ganner twitched the lightsaber, enough to shave a micrometer of skin off the man's collarbone, and the man only sighed.
"Ganner, you dope."
Ganner licked his lips.
"He says that like he knows me. You don't seem to understand." "You're the one who doesn't understand," the man said tiredly. "We're being watched. Right now." If I so much as step outside this chamber, a Yu Zhanvang pilot watching us will trigger a Dovin basal concealed not very far from here. It will take all of 10 seconds for this whole ship to collapse into a quantum black hole. 100 million people will die. Ganner's mouth dropped open.
What? How? I mean, why? Why would...
Because they don't trust me yet, the man said sadly. Ganner could hear the conviction in his voice, and in the force he felt truth behind his words. I'm telling you this, the man went on, because the same thing will happen if I'm killed, in case my conscience tempts me to sacrifice myself. As I said, they don't trust me yet.
But,
Ganner sputtered. That feeling of being in over his head thickened. He was drowning in it. Slowly, deliberately, without any hint of a threatening speed, the man lifted a hand. He pressed a spot on the side of his nose, and his face split in half. Ganner took an involuntary step back. The man's face peeled open like the rind of an Ithorian blood fruit, thick, meaty flaps pulling away from each other, taking with him his thinning, lank hair, the defeated pouches under his eyes, the jowls that had thickened his jawline. Beneath the retracting masker, the face Ganner saw was thin, chiseled, fringed with a raggedly scruffy beard, topped with blood-matted hair that might have been brown. Ganner's mouth dropped open. His fingers loosened as his hands fell to his sides. His lightsaber's blade vanished, and the handle clattered on the floor. When he could finally speak, the only word that could pass through his nerveless mouth was,
Jason!
Hi, Ganner, Jason said tiredly. He reached into his sleeve and withdrew a small pouch. He tossed it to Ganner. Here, catch. Ganner was too astonished to do anything other than catch it reflexively. The pad was damp to his touch and warm with Jason's body heat. Jason, what's going on? Numbness gathered in the center of his palm and began to climb his wrist. He frowned down at the pad in his hand.
What is this?
The tears of a friend of mine, Jason said. They're a contact poison. You'll be unconscious in about 15 seconds. Ganner's hand was already dead, and his right arm hung limp. The numbness washed into his chest, and when it touched his heart, it shot throughout his body. He pitched forward, unable even to lift an arm to break his fall, but Jason caught him and lowered him gently to the floor.
Wake the Villip, Jason said to one of the others, Yu Zhanvang warriors.
Ganner now knew they must be.
Tell Noma Nor that our trap has failed. Other Jedi will follow this one. We must return home.
Noma Nor? Return home? Ganner thought as darkness closed in around his mind.
They've done it. They've got Jason. They've turned him.
With a final convulsion of his will, Ganner reached out through the force and seized his lightsaber, lifting it with his mind, squeezing its activation plate to snap the blade to sizzling life. Jason gestured, and Ganner felt a stronger mind than his take hold of the lightsaber and wrench it from his control. The lightsaber's blade vanished. The hand grip bobbed gently in the air between Jason and the warriors. The last thing Ganner saw as darkness swallowed him was an amphistaff snaking out from Jason Solo's sleeve to slice the handle of Ganner's lightsaber neatly in half. We will take this pathetic excuse for a Jedi to Yu Zhantar, Jason Solo said. Then we'll kill him. Inside a camp ship, a chamber moved. This chamber had been grown specially, bred into this particular camp ship for this particular purpose. This particular chamber enclosed a pod of Yorick coral that had its own Dovin basal. This Dovin basal could have been used in either of two ways. With one command, it could have generated a gravity field intense enough to crush the entire camp ship into a point mass smaller than a grain of sand. But it had been given the other command, and so it would drive the chamber and its occupants across the galaxy.
The skin of the camp ship developed a small boil. This boil bulged on the ship's dark side. When it burst, it spat forth the chamber, which instantly streaked away, accelerating frantically into hyperspace, heading for Yuuzhan Tar. Within that chamber were four warriors of the Yuuzhan Vong, one pilot within the coral pod, and two humans. One of the humans sat in silent meditation. The other lay paralyzed, unconscious. But even in the dark void where he seemed to float, he held on to one thought. He didn't know where he was being taken. He didn't know what would happen to him. He didn't even know really who he was. He knew only one thing. This was the one lone thought to which he gave all his strength, to fix it forever in his memory. Jason Solo is a traitor. On the surface of an alien planet, a Jedi Knight lies dreaming. The Jedi Knight dreams of aliens and Yuuzhan Vong. He dreams of traitors who are Jedi and Jedi who are traitors. And sometimes in the dream, the traitor turns to him and says, "If I'm not a Jedi, am I still a traitor? If I'm not a traitor, am I still a Jedi?" Another figure in his dream, a skeletal Yuuzhan Vong, whom he somehow understands is Nom Anor, the prophet of Ramamul. And there is one more figure in the dream, small, lithe, and agile, a feather-crested alien of unknown species, a white fountain of the Force. The Jedi Knight also dreams of himself, lying motionless as though dead, tangled in a net of vines and woody limbs that is half hammock and half spider web. He no longer pays close attention. He has had this dream many, many times. It replays in his head like a corrupted data loop. The dream always begins,
"Not that I question the sincerity of your conversion,"
the Nomanor figure murmurs slyly to the traitor.
"But you must understand how this would look to, say, War Master Savang La. He might feel that if you were, in fact, devoted to the true way, you would have slaughtered this pathetic Jedi without mercy back at the camp ship, rather than carting him all the way here."
The traitor counters expressionlessly, "And deprive the true gods of a full formal sacrifice?" The feather-crested alien nods in fond approval, and soon the prophet must agree.
"To slaughter one of your former brethren will go far to ease the War Master's doubts."
The traitor agrees with a nod, and here the Jedi Knight's dream always becomes a nightmare, trapped once more inside his motionless, helpless, silent body, as though a corpse already, drowning in horror. He tries to reach into the Force, to touch the traitor's cold and treacherous heart, and receives, to his astonishment, a distinct feeling of warmth and good cheer, as though the traitor has given him a wink and a friendly squeeze on the arm. In the way of dreams, the Jedi Knight understands that the trap into which he has fallen was set for Jaina. There's something wrong with that, though, something he can't quite remember. If they had really wanted to catch Jaina, there must have been a better option. But what it might be, he cannot summon. As always, the prophet objects to the traitor's plan. Even the existence of the traitor is a closely held secret. Too many people, Yuuzhan Vong and Slave, would participate in this rehearsal. The secret would inevitably be lost. "Secrecy has outlived its usefulness," the traitor counters serenely. "My conversion to the true way serves no purpose if it remains secret. I will proclaim the gospel of the true gods to the whole galaxy on the day we take my sister. But we must prepare. We must practice if the ceremony is to be flawless. I must practice."
"Practice what?" the prophet asks. "A sacrifice is not a complex ritual."
The alien speaks.
"The great sacrifice, when it comes, will be a willing sacrifice. The other twin will walk to her death eagerly, with head high and joy in her heart, knowing that she brings the truth to this galaxy.
As will this one, the traitor claims. This is why you have made me what I am. I must bring him to the truth, to the light. He will hear truth ring from my mouth and see the light of the God I am shine from my eye. On that day, Ganner Rhysode will walk proudly at my heel as I lead him into the well of the world brain, where we will together offer up his death to the glory of the true gods. It is always at this point when a familiar clench of dread squeezes him back down into darkness for a time, until he surfaces once more and begins the dream again. So it goes, over and over and over, etched in psychic acid upon his brain. Over and over and over and over until, with a great shuddering gasp, Ganner Rhysode awoke. Waking up hurt. Somebody had stuck his whole arm to the elbow down Ganner's throat, fingers jammed into his bronchi. Now the fingers and hand and wrist and arm slowly withdrew, dry and hard and rough as a scab, grating up the inside of Ganner's throat as he choked and retched and tried to cough. At the same time, tubes and wires and needles pulled out of his veins and nerves and through his stretching skin. Ganner Rhysode, awaken, awake and arise. It is commanded. He knew he had been dreaming, and he knew he was waking up, but he couldn't fight free of the dream. His eyelids cranked open like rusted shut hatches. The arm that withdrew from his windpipe was less an arm than it was a branch, its bark coated with blood-tinged slime. He lay in a hammock that seemed to have been made of vines. More vines dangled from the ceiling, long, ropey vines knotted and coiled. But they weren't vines. They were more like tentacles, because vines couldn't uncoil and coil again, untie and retie themselves in impossibly complex knots. And they weren't tentacles, because tentacles don't end in huge, round, glowing red eyes that even through all the coiling and tying seem to always focus on you with unblinking concentration. This had to be an hallucination. Had to be. Because when he rolled his head to the side to blearily stare at whoever was giving him these pompous, vaguely stupid-sounding orders, the guy looked just like Jason Solo. Ganner blinked and lifted a hand to wipe sleep gunk from his eyes. When he looked again with slightly clearer vision, it was still Jason. He wore a long, flowing robe of black so dark that its folds vanished into formless night. Along his sleeves spidered an intricate design that glowed with a light of its own, chased in scarlet and viridian, like a network of external arteries that pulsed light instead of blood. He opened his mouth to ask Jason what kind of stupid masked ball he was planning to crash in this ridiculous costume. But before his drug-numbed lips could shape the words, he remembered. Jason Solo is a traitor. Do not fear, Ganner Rhysode, he said in a weird, dark voice like a bad imitation of a hypnotist. Instead, rejoice. The day of your blessed release has arrived. Does... Ganner had to hack a wad of haven't talked in days out of his throat. Does this mean... you're going to let me go? The gifts of the true gods are three. Jason's words fell like boulders down a well. Life they give us, that we may serve their glory. This is the least of their gifts. Pain they give us, that we may learn life's value lies only in their service. This is a greater gift. But the greatest gift of the gods is death. It is their release from the burden of pain and the curse of life. It is their reward, their grace, their mercy, granted liberally, even to the unjust and the infidel. Captured, drugged, helpless, about to be murdered. Boy, It's a good thing I was so cautious and unobtrusive, Ganner thought muzzily. Otherwise, I might have gotten myself into trouble.
Yeah, you know,
he said with a weak laugh. Those wacky gods. I guess they mean well, but they just don't know when to stop. They're way too generous. I'm getting along fine with just the first gift. The other two, hey, you know, I can wait.
Silence! Jason commanded, stretching forth his arms, hands high, palms forward, as though to address a multitude from a mountaintop.
Ganner stared speechless, but instead of continuing, Jason's eyes drifted closed. Jason? One hand curled to a fist, then extended a forefinger. Wait. Jason's eyes opened, then his left lid drooped in a long, slow wink. Jason's eyes closed again. Then slowly, one at a time, so did each eye on the end of each of the tentacle vines that hung from the ceiling. As the red glow within each orb faded into darkness, a pair of vertical eyelids squeezed across them, and the tentacle vines gradually relaxed, hanging limp, motionless. Jason dropped his arms and opened his eyes.
How do you feel? Any strength coming back? You think you can walk?
What are you? What's going on? Jason!
We can talk now, but not for long. I persuaded all the creatures monitoring us to take a nap.
Creatures monitoring? I don't...
They were watching us. That was the point of that silly Nerf and Wookiee show just now. The Yuuzhan Vong have decided I'm the avatar of one of their twin gods.
I had a dream. A dream about a sacrifice. You were going to kill me, then find Jaina and kill her too. That was just a dream, wasn't it?
Jason reached into one sleeve and pulled out a pouch similar to the one in which he'd carried that poison pad back on the camp ship. This pouch contained a similar wad of damp fabric, which Jason began to apply directly to the blood-welling punctures where the tube vines had withdrawn through Ganner's skin.
We're on Yuuzhan Tar.
Jason kept wiping him down with the pad. The Yuuzhan Vong homeworld. Jason dropped the pad on the floor and shook out a long, flowing robe of white.
Here, sit up, put this on.
Ganner frowned.
What's this?
It's your sacrificial robe, for the processional to the Well of the World Brain.
Ganner stared, his dream flooded back to him.
This is some kind of trick. This is all some kind of trick.
Yeah, but not on you.
Ganner shook his head wordlessly. Some of Jason's quick-sketched explanation made sense. The planted rumors leading to the trap on the camp ship had never really been intended to catch anybody. Jason had only been stalling for time. If he'd really wanted to catch Jaina, all he would have had to do was reopen the force bond that had linked them since birth.
Nothing in the galaxy stops Jaina from doing pretty much whatever she decides to do. So I have to hold that part of myself shut down. If she finds out I'm alive, she'll come for me. And that'll just get her killed too.
Jason explained that the sacrifice was a sham. It was nothing more than an excuse to get into what he called the Well of the World Brain. The Yuuzhan Vong, especially Noma Noor, who was Jason's control, hadn't let him anywhere near the place. They didn't entirely trust that Jason's conversion was real. Ganner understood. He didn't entirely trust that it wasn't.
I've been waiting a long time for a chance to steal 10 minutes alone in the Well of the World Brain. You, Ganner, your sacrifice, you're my key in the door to the well. All I need is to get in there.
Repeat after me. I have seen the light of the true way and go to the gods with joy in my heart, full of gratitude for their third gift.
What makes you think I'd go along with this?
I'm not asking, Ganner. I'm offering. I don't need your cooperation. 10 minutes after I walk through the door of the well, we'll both be dead whether you play along or not.
How do I know I can trust you? How do I know I shouldn't jump you right now?
Ganner shifted his weight onto the balls of his feet, reached a balanced stance from which he could spring in any direction. Jason spread his hands. His face was blankly expectant.
Choose and act.
Choose? What do you mean, choose? Choose to die here for nothing, or choose to die in the well of the world brain, where your death can change the galaxy.
But how am I supposed to decide? How do I know whether I can trust you?
Jason's face softened again, and a hint of the Solo half-smile traced itself ruefully onto his lips. He reached again within his robe. When his hand came out, he opened it toward Ganner, offering. Here. On his open palm balanced the hand grip of a lightsaber.
Take it, Jason said. Use it if you must, even if you choose to use it on me.
So what is this, a fake? Another trick? Is it going to blow up in my hand?
It's not a fake, Jason said, with a sadness so profound it could only be expressed with quiet, dry exactitude. It's not a trick. It's Anakin's. Ganner could only stare, drop-jawed, dazzled, awed.
And you want to give it to me?
You might need one, since I destroyed yours. Ganner's hand shook as he took the lightsaber. He triggered the activator and the blade snarled out to full extension, brilliant, eye-burning, buzzing with a hum he could feel in his teeth.
What about you? Where's yours?
Jason shook his head. I haven't seen my lightsaber since Merkur. For what I have to do, weapons are irrelevant. A dull thudding penetrated one wall, a wall dominated by a huge, knurled pucker like a pursed mouth carved from wood. Voices came thinly from outside, snarling in the guttural, retching hacks of the Yuuzhan Vong tongue.
They're here, Jason said.
He nodded toward the lightsaber in Ganner's hand. Better put that away. If they find it on you, they'll kill us both. A gently ironic smile quirked his lips. I mean, they'll kill us both too soon. Ganner was floundering, choking on unreality. Just remember, I have seen the light of the true way, Jason repeated firmly, meaningfully. And I go to the gods with joy in my heart, full of gratitude for their third gift. As Ganner stood gaping helplessly, the puckered mouth on the wall suddenly yawned into a hatchway that opened on an enormous vaulted hall beyond. He jerked, nearly dropping Anakin's lightsaber in his haste to deactivate it, and stuffed it into one of his white robe's voluminous sleeves. The hall was full of scarified Yuuzhan Vong warriors standing rigidly at attention, weapons extended in present arms. Just beyond the opening stood a pair of nervous, sweating Yuuzhan Vong of a caste Ganner did not recognize. Several steps farther in, a dozen or more impressively costumed Yuuzhan Vong, caparisoned in identically fantastic arrays of clothing that shone and shimmered and writhed with restless life, formed a half-circle that framed two individuals. One of these wore the immense spiny headdress Ganner had heard was favored by Shaper Masters. The other wore a long black robe and grinned a lipless, needle-toothed smile Ganner recognized from his dream. Nome Anor. Jason faced them without the slightest appearance of concern.
What signifies this interruption? He intoned, once more in the rolling thunder mode of his Avatar of God voice. How do you dare disturb me as I share the light?
Nome Anor stepped forward and leaned close to Jason to murmur, astonishingly,
Very good, Jason Solo. You wear the mantle impressively.
Then he stepped back and said more loudly so that those nearby could hear.
The monitor creature suddenly lost consciousness. We were concerned. Is all well?
Nothing can occur that is not my will. If these creatures slept, it is because I made it so.
Jason turned to Ganner grandly.
Tell these weak, faithless creatures what has transpired within this chamber.
Ganner experienced an instant of perfect clarity. Death waited for him no matter what. It wasn't a question of whether he'd die. It was only a question of how.
I have seen the light of the true way.
His voice came out surprisingly steady, considering the flutter in his chest and the way his guts had turned to water.
And I go to the gods with joy in my heart and gratitude for their third gift.
Ganner walked one pace behind Jason's left shoulder, trying to look solemn and dignified rather than scared out of his mind. He was so nauseated his eyes were watering. Ahead, ringed at a similarly respectful distance by an honor guard of warriors, walked Noma Nor and the shaper who'd been in the hall, a big, ugly beggar with a cluster of tentacles growing out of one side of his mouth. Jason spoke in quiet tones throughout the processional, relating bits of insight he'd gained into Yuuzhan Vong culture and biotechnology, keeping his voice low, half-whispered, lips barely moving so that none of their escort would know he was talking. The processional spiraled through a titanic hedge maze that was still growing, knitting itself into place around them. Huge curving walls of interwoven branches that sported needle-pointed thorns ranging from half a centimeter to as long as Ganner's arm. He caught some of Jason's explanation that this hedge maze would serve a dual purpose. Not only was it a ceremonial avenue, but it would also double as an anti-personnel defense surrounding the all-important Well of the World Brain, if Yuuzhan Tar were ever invaded. Occasionally, through gaps in the half-completed maze, Ganner could catch glimpses of their destination. Enveloping the Well of the World Brain was a mountain of Yorick coral, half a kilometer high, spreading in a shallow dome nearly 2 kilometers across. Even buried, the shape that underlay the Coral Mountain was to anyone who'd ever been to Coruscant, unmistakable. The Well of the World Brain used to be the Galactic Senate. The thorn maze abruptly ended, opening onto an immense wedge-shaped causeway of curving pale ribs that seemed to be the smoothly interlaced horizontal trunks of living trees, leaf-bearing branches tangled toward the sun to either side. The foot of the causeway spanned at least 100 meters between the branch walls. It tapered like an arrowhead as it rose, forming a ramp whose point touched the great door of the Galactic Senate. As the vanguard began to mount the causeway, Ganner's knees buckled and he pitched forward onto the causeway's foot, curled into a fetal ball around the spiny fist of nausea clenched in his guts. Saliva flooded his mouth and his sides heaved.
Ganner. Ganner, what's wrong?
Jason's voice came from close by, just above, low and worried. Ganner couldn't get up. He couldn't speak. He couldn't even open his eyes. The grunting hack of the Yuuzhan Vong tongue sounded in the middle distance. Two voices, one imperiously disdainful, the other unctuous, conciliating. A moment later, he heard Nomanor's rasp in basic closer by.
The Shaper Lord inquires why the Jedi cowers like a brain slit. I lied to him, Jason Solo. I told him this is how humans show reverence for the true gods.
He's only a man, Ganner heard Jason reply. You can't keep a human sedated for weeks and then expect him to march like this. He's weak because he's ill.
Ganner burned with shame. Even Jason was lying for him now. Self-loathing rose up the back of Ganner's throat, like vomit, burning, driving stinging tears through his eyes.
Come on, Ganner, we're almost there, Jason whispered. Don't screw it up now.
Invisible hands caught Ganner under the shoulders and lifted him to his feet. Though he hung limp, the processional once more began to move forward, mounting the causeway toward the great door. His legs swung without his will to drive them, moving as though he walked under his own power. His body tingled with the touch of the Force. Jason was carrying him.
There, you see? Jason said to Nomanor. He's fine. Return to your place and reassure the Shaper Lord.
Ganner hung in Jason's invisible Force grip, drowning in humiliation as Nomanor moved quickly away.
If only he could die. If only the trunk causeway beneath his feet would gape like a mouth and swallow him right now. His whole life, he'd chased a single dream. He had only wanted to be a hero.
And that was it. That's what was making him sick. Himself. He was sick of being Ganner Risode. Sick of trying to be a hero. Sick of trying not to be a hero. Sick of being a crappy Jedi, a mediocre pilot, and a bloody lousy leader of men. Just sick. The Vanguard parted as it approached the great door, dividing down the middle to line either side of the causeway. Jason came to a stop before the great door and moved Ganner to his side. "Ganner, can you stand?" he asked softly. "You don't have to walk, just stand. I need to do something else right now." Ganner clenched every ounce of his will to swallow the rising tide of his shame and self-disgust. He drew on the force to hold himself upright and for the strength to steady his voice.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm okay, Jason," he lied, then made himself say, "Thanks."
Solemnity settled back over Jason's features like a mask. He turned to face the assembled thousands and lifted his arms.
"I am Jason Solo. I am human. I was a Jedi. I am now a servant of the truth."
Ganner felt a surge in the force like a vast rushing wind. It passed him without touching him. The great door swung inward to reveal the shadowed reach of the atrium beyond and the cavernous mouths of the grand concourse to either side.
"Witness," Jason thundered. "Witness the will of the gods."
Jason turned and walked briskly through the great door. A swirl of the force drew Ganner after him. Noma Noor and the Shaper Lord made to follow, along with the priests and the Vanguard band. But as soon as Ganner was clear of the doorway, Jason turned and made a small gesture that Ganner felt as another swift, incredibly powerful rush in the force. The great door boomed shut. The atrium had become a vast cavern of living Yorick coral. Shadows, huge and black, masked every fold of coral, and the mouths of the grand concourse to either side yawned bottomless depths of night. The sole light leaked into the atrium from an archway opposite the great door. Jason was already trotting toward the archway. "Follow me. We don't have much time." Ganner stumbled after him. The arch led to nearly half a kilometer of Yorick coral tunnel. The tunnel's roof opened to a vast cavernous red-lit space overhead, and the walls too fell away.
"What is this place?"
"Look around," Jason said grimly. Ganner barely heard him. He gaped, turning in a slow, dumbfounded circle. This used to be the Senate's Grand Convocation Chamber. 100 meters below, where once it stood the pillar of the Chief of State's podium, there now boiled a great pool of glowing slime. Huge bubbles roiled to the surface, bursting into flares of scarlet and starflower yellow. It was from this pool that the light came. And down in that pool of glowing slime, a vast fleshy bulge moved, breaching the surface in a slick black curve before submerging once more. Ganner jolted back from the edge.
"Yeah! Jason, there's something down there!"
"Yeah." Jason stepped to the front edge of the platform. "Don't worry. It's a friend of mine." A spray of tentacles shot upward from the slime. Ganner threw himself backward as tentacles hissed through the fog around them. Impossibly flexible ropes of muscles slicing the air so fast, he couldn't even tell how many there were. Tentacles slammed against the platform, knocking Ganner half off his feet, chipping away head-sized hunks of coral. Jason never moved.
"This, friend of yours?" Ganner said shakily.
It doesn't seem too happy to see you."
"Yeah, well, I can't say I'm surprised. The last time we saw each other, I was trying to kill it."
Jason pointed at an angle down across the well. "See that platform? The one sticking out under that fold of coral? That's the platform for the Kashyyyk delegation. Straight back on your right, you'll find the Kashyyyk senator's private office. There's a turbo lift shaft behind a concealed door by his desk. Just slide down the inside of the shaft. It'll take you right into the tunnels. If you can reach the tunnels, you should at least be able to find a place to hide for a while. You might live a few days. You might even escape." Ganner went cold.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about making a run for it, Ganner. Give yourself a chance.
No! Ganner stepped back, shaking his head. I won't!
We've only got a minute or two before Nomanor decides he can't keep pretending nothing's gone wrong. About 2 minutes after that, they'll blow open the great door. They'll kill me about 30 seconds after that.
You'd expect me to make a run for it and let you die? For something you can't even explain? You're coming with me or I'm not going.
Still playing the hero, Ganner? Ganner winced. That had hit too close to the bone, but he stood his ground.
No, I'm just the sidekick here. You're the hero, Jason. We need heroes like you. That's why I came looking for you. The New Republic needs you.
Anakin had his path. Jaina has hers. Jason spread his hands as though to indicate the futility of arguing with fate. I have mine.
I don't care about any stupid path, Ganner said desperately. They'll blow the door any second. We have to go.
No, you have to go. I have to... Ganner, I need you to understand. The only power I have, the only power any of us have, is to be who we are. That's what I'm going to do here. Be who I am. Illumination burst within Ganner's brain. In that instant, everything finally made sense. He understood what Jason had been talking about. There was nothing to fear. He understood the power of being who he was. He didn't even really have to know who he was. He could decide. Suddenly, his life made sense. His life had been a story of pretending to be a hero. Well, he thought, okay then. He hefted Anakin's lightsaber. Ganner squeezed the blade to life and stared at a sizzling purple shaft. Here was the weapon of a hero. A real hero. A dazzling old Ganner, forget the consequences and have some fun smile dawned on his face. I don't have to be a hero, he thought in silent wonder. All I have to do is pretend. Jason held out his hand. Ganner took Jason's hand and gripped it fiercely. It'll be a show they'll never forget. Jason stepped back and lifted his arms, and the pulse of scarlet and green glow from the arterial sigils on his robe synchronized with the shifting light of the bubbling slime below. Tentacles coiled upward behind him, beyond the lip of the platform, arching high overhead, trailing slime that shone and pulsed, framing him with a living corona.
Jason! Ganner gasped, reaching toward him. Behind you!
I know. Jason turned his face upward. The tentacles lifted Jason in their grip, bearing him up and off the platform, cradling him gently, almost lovingly, as they lowered him toward the bubbling slime.
Buy me 10 minutes, Jason said. That should be enough.
The clatter of booted feet grew from the tunnel. Ganner paused for one last moment, watching Jason pulled beneath the surface of the slime. He felt a burst of power in the force, a shove from below, an impulse. Go. He went. Nomanor squinted through the smoke that boiled from the shattered gape of what had been the great door. Red-gold slime light pulsed through the smoke from the well archway. A figure solidified in that archway, a silhouette approaching lazily through the smoke, haloed by the slime light. A superstitious chill climbed Nomanor's spine.
You there, Nomanor called nervously in Basic. What are you doing there?
The answer was a deep, mockingly cheerful growl.
Isn't it obvious? I'm standing in your way.
Ganner Rysoed. Nomanor began to relax. This was Ganner Rysoed, the weakling who could not even mount the causeway. Ganner Rysoed, who got no respect from the other Jedi. Ganner, the poser, the play actor, the joke. Nomanor snorted.
Stand aside. There are thousands of warriors out here. You cannot hope to stop us.
I don't have to stop you.
All I have to do is slow you down. From the shadow's hand sprang a meter-long bar of vividly sizzling amethyst.
You want me to move?
Come on and move me. The smoke thinned and cleared, and the human within the archway didn't look at all like the Ganner Nomanor remembered. Ganner spun his shining blade in a dazzlingly complex flourish that illuminated the arch around him, making it shine like a rainbow frame for the pure animal grace of his body.
This threshold, he announced through a happy grin, is mine. I claim it for my own. Bring on your thousands, one at a time or all in a rush. I don't give a damn.
His flourish ended with the blade slanted before his chest, and his teeth flashed in the gloom.
None shall pass.
They come at him one at a time, an endless stream, each warrior in turn charging toward honorable single combat. Then they come two at a time. By the time they begin to come in groups, they have to scramble over bodies of their dead comrades to reach him. A pile of bodies. A pile that becomes a wall, a rampart. Ganner Rysode builds a fortress of the dead. From a safe vantage point, behind a twisted curve of durasteel that had once been part of the great door, Nomanor watched with appalled fascination. All he could see through the smoke and the massive warriors who pressed forward to engage the mad Jedi were flashes of brilliant purple, sometimes joined by the Jedi himself, as he leapt and whirled and spun, always in motion, always attacking, stabbing and slashing, littering the atrium with corpses and severed limbs. A few strides down the causeway, among the milling crowd of priests and warriors, he saw Vergère. She met his eye, and with a twitch of her head, motioned for him to follow. She moved well downslope into the blue-white sunlight and stopped with one hand holding a leafy vertical branch of the road trees. Nomanor was already snarling by the time he reached her.
Do you know what your student has done? That sniveling traitor has betrayed us, and it's all your fault.
Perhaps it is. Her fluting voice was cheerful as ever. But let us be clear on the issue of fault, eh, Executor? What is important is not whose fault this truly is. All that matters is whom Savang La will choose to blame for it, yes? Nomanor pulled fleshless lips back over needle-sharp teeth.
And why do you come to me now?
Because you should take me with you. He went absolutely still.
You think I have some sort of escape plan?
Executor, please. Vergère chided knowingly. You always have an escape plan. This time, you have something even better. A secret coral craft grown below the well.
I have nothing of the sort.
He glanced back over his shoulder up the causeway. To leave now would be too suspicious. He might never make it. Vergère seemed somehow to read his mind. Executor, if we do not flee now, there will be no flight at all. There will be no ship. She stood on tiptoe to lean close to him and whispered, Jason Solo will steal it. The surface of the slime pool closes over Jason Solo like lips, warm as blood. He does not feel it. Knotted ropes of tentacles stretch wide his arms, bind close his legs, circle, garret tight his throat. He does not see them. At the deepest depths of the slime pool, the tentacles hold him face up, his back to a ring of jagged rubble. That ring of rubble once had been the base of the Chancellor's podium from which his mother had so often declaimed. Jason does not notice. His attention is filled with a hollow in his chest. His empty center rings with anger and mistrust and hungry triumph. The emotions of the world brain, which has caught the former friend who tried to murder it. The former friend it had trusted and by whom it had been betrayed. The tentacles contract, drawing him into the gaping maw, and the sword teeth close upon his flesh. Jason does not recoil in fear. Instead, he opens himself. In his most secret center, that gap in his being that once fed him pain, he offers an embrace. Into the hollow in his center, he pours compassion, absolute empathy, perfect understanding. He shares with the Duryam all his experience with the spectrum of life. The featureless whiteout of agony, the red tide of rage, the black hole of despair, the gamma sleet of loss, and the lush verdure of growing things, the grays of stone and duricrete, the glisten of gemstones and transparasteel, the blue-white sizzle of the noonday sun, and its exact echo in a lightsaber's blade. He shares how much he loves it all, for all these things are all one thing: pain and joy, loss and reunion, life and death. To love any is to love all, for none can exist without every other. The universe, the force, all is one. Ganner is not directly aware of the sequence of his death. Time vanished along with fear and doubt and pain in that eternal second when he surrendered his self-command. Standing in the archway, waiting for the Yuuzhan Vong, Ganner realized that this, right now, right here, was what his whole life had been for. None shall pass. He wields the blade of a fallen hero, but now he is the hero, and it is others who fall. The Force thunders through him, and he thunders through the Force, letting slip the bonds of control, leaving aside conscious thought, answering only the surge of his passion and his joy. He finds power undreamed of. He has become the battle. There are only the dancers and the dance. The dance is all there is. From Whirl of Quarks to Wheel of Galaxies, all is motion. All is dance. All is. Nomanor pulled himself over a bent girder, and there it was. Long and sleek, sculpted for atmospheric speed, twinned Dovin basals, one for motion, one for defense, surfaces angled to deflect sensors, flat matte black, non-reflective to defeat visual targeting. Once inside, he would be safe.
"Beautiful, isn't it?"
he murmured, as he put his hand to the coral craft's nose tongue.
"This is the result, Verger, of contingency planning. I always have a contingency plan to cover any possible disaster."
"Do you always?"
Something in her voice froze him in place.
"Any possible disaster?"
Before he could even draw breath to ask what she meant, his unspoken question was answered by a sickeningly familiar sound. Slowly, glacially, afraid of what he'd see but unable to stop himself, Nomanor turned toward a new light in the ruined office. Light that sizzled green and struck white highlights off the black curves of his coral craft. His mouth opened, closed, opened again. He wanted to ask where she had gotten a lightsaber. Verger seemed to read his mind.
"It's Jason's," she chimed cheerfully.
"If you kill me," Nomanor began desperately.
"Kill you? Don't be silly."
Cables from the dangling jungle of wreckage suddenly writhed to life, whipping through the air to bind Nomanor's limbs.
"You can't fly my craft. It's imprinted on me."
"That may be true," she allowed, "but I doubt it. Your coral craft is, after all, a living creature. And Jason, you may have noticed, has a certain gift for making friends."
"You, he,
You're mad. This can't be happening.
Executor, she said severely, cutting him short with a twitch of the light blade. Didn't I say Jason Solo will steal your ship?
Abruptly, the dance falters, stumbles, begins to limp. There is no one left to fight. Ganner sways, dizzy, dying, poisoned with amphistaff venom from scores of wounds. Only the Force holds him upright. A grinding rumble approaches, and soon he can see what makes this sound, what produces these tremors he feels shaking the floor. Something huge and dark, trundling on curving, knotted legs like buttresses, splayed claws flattening Yuuzhan Vong corpses heedlessly as it approaches.
I guess it was inevitable, Ganner thinks, with a twinge of melancholy. Sooner or later, the bad guys always bring up their armor.
Ganner can feel the Duracrete walls of the Senate, which formed the well's skeletal structure. He can feel that the tunnel had cut through any number of load-bearing members. He can feel that the Duracrete around him is crazed with stress fractures, half broken already, and sagging under the unimaginable tons of the coral that surrounds it. Ganner smiles. With the Force, he reaches into the Duracrete around them all, and he begins to shove. Jason was surprised by life. The teeth of the world brain had not closed upon him. Its tentacles had not ripped the flesh from his bones. Instead, a bubble of air had formed around him, and tentacles had cradled him like a sleeping child, and lips had closed over sword-edged teeth to touch him with a kiss. Because he was the world brain, and the world brain was him, and each was everything else. And Jason had learned that one can meet the universe and all its irrational pain, which means meeting oneself, with fear, or with hatred, or with despair. Or one can choose to meet it with love. Tentacles fell away from his arms and legs, and the air bubble around him collapsed. He brushed the world brain lightly with his fingertips, a goodbye to a friend. Then Jason Solo shot from the slime pool as though fired from a torpedo launcher. He burst into the brimstone smoke, his robe blazing with slime that trailed from him in shining ropes and dripped like falling stars. He sailed over the slime pool to alight at the bowl rim, where the coral met the bare durasteel of a Senate platform. He lifted his head, fixing his gaze upon the cantilevered bridgeway that stuck out into the well like a tongue from a mouth that belched smoke and scarlet flame and the amethyst lightning of a lightsaber biting flesh. And he could hear a human voice up there. He could not make out words, but the tone was unmistakable. Ganner was laughing. Deep in the Force, Jason seized that bridgeway with the hands of his mind. One long, smooth tug would lift him to it, and he could reach Ganner's side and join in his fight, stand at his shoulder against the Yuuzhan Vong.
Jason, wait.
Verger stood only a few meters above and to his right, on the coral-draped Senate platform that had once belonged to the delegation from Kashyyyk.
You cannot save him, Jason. All you can do is die with him. He has chosen this destiny.
I can't let people keep giving their lives for me.
He does not give his life for you. He gives your life to you. Will you refuse the gift of a dying man?
I won't leave him.
She shrugged.
Then you'll be wanting this.
She tossed something down to him. It spun lazily through the air, flashing silver in the slime light. He caught it instinctively. It was a lightsaber. It was his lightsaber. She said,
"Choose and act."
The well shook, and he could feel sudden terror from the world brain as the cantilevered bridgeway and platform collapsed, plunging 100 meters to crash into the slime pool, and the world seemed to rock and tremble, and a blast of smoke and dust burst from the tunnel.
"What?"
Jason gasped,
coughing in the dust that smelled of burning blood and duracrete.
What? Is that Ganner? What's happening up there?
It may be Ganner. It may be a weapon of the Yuuzhan Vong. It makes no difference. Your choice is the same. Stay or go.
Jason stared up at the mouth of the tunnel. He could see it now choked with rubble. Then the platforms around it began to sag, to crumble, and slide down the bowl toward the slime pool. Even the gloom-shrouded ceiling high above seemed to droop, and he felt a warm hand on his shoulder and heard a warm whisper in his ear. Go. It sounded like Ganner. He chose. Show me the way out of here. Vergère smiled down upon him fondly.
Of course, she said. I was only waiting for you to ask.
Outside the universe, there is nothing. This nothing is called hyperspace. A tiny bubble of existence hangs in the nothing. This bubble is called a ship. The bubble is its own universe. Within this universe, there are traitors. One is a teacher and a student. Another is a student and a teacher. One is a gardener. This universe falls toward another wider universe. A universe that is a garden, which is still full of weeds.
This is Jonathan Davis. We hope you have enjoyed this production of Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Traitor, by Matthew Stover. This program was produced, directed, and abridged by Kevin Thompson. Executive producer, Jacob Bronstein. Star Wars, The New Jedi Order, Traitor, is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2002. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production, copyright 2002, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.